Welcome, Restoration Rebels. It's good to have you here with us today. I've got an interesting guest today. He is a fairly new member to the Restoration Rebel community, but he's become a friend to me over the years, and he's someone I trust emphatically, and what he does is crucial to what I do and what companies like Stellar eMarketing do. So let's invite Alex Donovan, President, CEO of A-Squared Studio. Is that a good title for you?
Owner-operator, I think it was fine with me.
Owner-operator, fair enough. So A-Squared Studio, most people know it as a web design studio, but you guys do a few different things, right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, thanks for having me today, Jonathan. This is really great. And hey to everybody out there in Restoration Rebel Group. But yeah, we do quite a few things in our business. You know, outside of web development, we offer graphic work, photography, videography. We've done a few commercials for people just recently. You know, and as a full design firm, not just not just developing websites on their own. You know, like right now, we're in the middle of a project to do a major application for an industrial manufacturer. So it's pretty wide ranged. You know, and we have a pretty diverse background with a really talented crew that can do quite a few different things.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Yeah. So full disclosure to our audience, Alex and I recorded this a week ago today, and unfortunately the system we were recording on died 27 minutes in, and we were having a great, I mean, it was super nerdy, but it was a really good time.
It was. I had fun too.
Yeah, it was. And it was devastating. It was like a dog getting hit by a car. I was really upset about it. So we have revamped our recording platform, and I've actually brought in a team of professionals to then go back and make sure it's done correctly. So hopefully, this podcast isn't blowing the speakers in your truck or anything like that, as I'm sure most podcasts in the past have. But we were on this train of thought that I didn't think we were going to get onto, but then I found myself thinking about it throughout the week and talking to a few people about it in relation to website conversion and why it's crucial. And it all centered around your odd background. So tell us about how you came to start, you and your wife came to start A-Squared Studio.
You know, actually, it's a good question. It was totally by accident. We started 11 years ago, so it was fall of 2007. And someone came to us knowing that we had a really strong graphic background and a fine art background going to University of Connecticut. And so I have a bachelor's in fine arts, and so does my wife. And our background was very diverse. Like, we were concentrated in a lot of different areas and still do our work to this day as our own fine artwork. But regardless of that, someone contacted us knowing that we could do graphic work and needed someone to make them postcards. So it was for a dental consulting company, and we ended up making like a batch of these, and he wanted to recruit us to come work for his company. And one of the requirements of working for him was, you know, suit and tie. And I'm totally not a suit and tie guy. Like, that is not my bag. I don't fit into a blazer too well and all that. It's just not who I am. So I said no, you know, and it was a long recruit cycle. I mean, it was like 5 hours of him really pushing to get us work there because he really liked the work. So he said, okay, fine. If you're not going to work for me, I totally understand. He goes, but I recommend you guys go out on your own and start your own business. He goes, you have the talent, you have the skill, and you can really do a great job. And we're like, wow, okay, that sounds interesting. And I was working in film at the time in Chicago, doing work and as a photo assistant behind the scenes for like big film and photo shoots. My wife was working retail. And it was like a one night conversation. We're like, we got to do this. This is cool. Like, this is really more in line with what we want to do and what we went to school for. So we started. I stopped taking freelance gigs like immediately. I just wrapped up a couple contracts I had. And we had a second bedroom in our apartment, and I made a logo like that night and like put it on the door, and I'm like, okay, our office is open, you know, like that was one of those deals. And it was very like, you know, very like do it yourself. And it was awesome. You know, it was tough from the beginning. You know, we were just doing graphic work. We fell into web accidentally because we looked at there was a big need for it. We're getting phone calls for it and interest. And I turned away work. I was like, I don't know how to do websites. you know, like I did some basic stuff in college, you know, just learning how to build a basic website, but not really understanding it much. So I schooled myself. It was like all do it yourself training, a lot of Google searches, a lot of mistakes, a lot of making our own stuff. You know, like we didn't have clients at the time to do websites. So I made fake companies and fake websites and promoted them as real websites.
And they're probably still getting traffic to this day, right?
And I don't know where they're at. I honestly, I think they're archived somewhere. I have them somewhere. Like we did like a fake sushi company and like a fake like boutique store. And like they were really nice. They're all like in Flash because Flash was really cool at the time. And they're all animated. And I learned all this cool stuff from different programming background stuff. And it was great. And we started getting gigs and started building the business from there. And we started getting into more complex recipes and complex ideas. And, you know, you just get more professional the more you're working at and the more you're schooling yourself. Like even to this day, like even like yesterday, I learned something I didn't know because I'm always looking for new things and new solutions and better ways to do things. So it's an ever changing field you got to stay on top of, but we grew the company, you know, like now I have staff, you know, we have really great, you know, really great development. We work with clients from all over the world. We do small, you know, 2-page websites to very elaborate applications and everything in between that. So it's pretty diverse. But yeah, the starting was there. And like we had this really strong art background. And that process that we learned in art school, funny enough, actually really worked. It was very practical. You know, I had really good teachers, really good professors who talked very much about practical application of art. We never got into the business side of it, but it was like, you know, how can you use this in the real world? So that methodology that my wife and I had, we put into the business as a workflow and a production line and understanding the needs of the client and then how to say that to an audience. And because that was our background in art was always about like communicating something, showing something, you know, displaying, whether it's a personal idea or, you know, something you feel very passionate about out there in the world, you wanted to share something. So we took that idea of, you know, okay, we want to say something. Well, we need to say something with the design, with the website, with the marketing message on there.
Right.
And we had to take this viewpoint of like, well, I'm doing it as a designer and I'm not designing it for design's sake because we can do really amazing elaborate designs. But when it came down to it, like what's the usefulness of it?
Right.
And we had to take that viewpoint of the consumer, you know, the client is the client, you know, and like they have an idea of what they want. But the real, it's funny, there's like two clients you have. You have like the client who's paying you for the job and you're going to do everything to meet the requirements and exceed those for the job. But it's also the other client is the customer. It's my client's customers, you know, and I have to take that viewpoint of like, well, if I come to the website or the marketing message for the first time, is it making that impact? Is it impinging enough? And whether it's the message or the design, yeah. You know?
This is what I latched onto last week during our Hindenburg of a podcast we recorded. In describing your fine art background, you made a statement that art is communication, and that might be, you know, art theory 101 for all I know. I clearly wasn't an art major, and to this day, I'm doing good if my stick figures, you know, look fairly realistic as stick figures. That is not how my brain's wired. Just, you know, I guess I create in different ways. But you made this statement, and it sort of haunted me all week. Mm-hmm. This idea of that's what you're doing on a website, and this idea that, well, what is the goal? What do we achieve with a good website? And as I kind of took a step back and evaluated the statement, it made perfect sense why you're so good at what you do with websites. So, but let's talk about, I mean, obviously the meat and potatoes here is, okay, how can a website make you money and why should it? And why do most not make money ever? And it's usually because it's either sending out the wrong message or it's not sending the right message to the right people, right?
Right. Yeah, more or less. Yeah, that's very true. You know, I mean, you can take two types of examples. You have like water damage websites, right? And you have a manufacturing company, and those are two totally different audiences. You know, like a manufacturing company typically has two different types of customers that are coming to their website. There's a subset within that too, is like a 2B kind of thing. So the first one would be like an engineer who needs to actually look to see if a company is capable of doing something. The second person on a manufacturing website would be like a purchasing agent, someone who has a PO or who needs to make a purchase, or someone who's making that decision to buy is, or has an assistant do that, is looking for a company that could be, you know, a vendor for them or some type of supplier. So there's different types of communication you need to have on that website. One needs to be a little more technical for the engineer who's going to do the research, and the other one is more for the person on the purchasing or executive side, the executive side, who's making the decision, like, can I rely on this company? Are they capable of doing what I need them to do, and can I count on them? So you have to handle that in two different ways about that type of customer. And it's how you either lay out the website, show the full breadth of their capabilities, and then get into some of the technical information. So that's like one. On the water damage website, you know, you have technically like one or two types of customers on there, depending on what the guy does. Like, some guys do commercial work, some guys don't. You know, some guys strictly focus on residential. You know, the commercial guy, we have found, is really looking for that direct communication. Yeah, we can handle it. We want to build a relationship. We have worked with these other types of commercial properties before and done a great job. The residential is coming from the viewpoint, they don't want to do any research at all. They're in an emergency situation. Like, look, can you help out? And that's really what they're looking for. So they need all that data right up front. So it's taking that viewpoint of those people and saying it to them. So it's not like this dispersing all over the place, shotgun used car dealer approach to making a website. You know, it's a very clear, concise message to that person. It's like, you have to think, it's very similar to like if you're sitting in a coffee shop talking to someone across them and you're trying to get your point across, so that, you know, or you're trying to have them understand the viewpoint, or you're working on the level of how they would understand something, you know, and like educating them on a point. It's very similar to that conversation. It literally is a conversation on a website. And that gets lost. You know, I have seen tons and tons of water damage websites where the message is just all over the place, you know, and not including code errors and website errors of just bad build stuff.
Right.
Just, you look and you're like, where am I supposed to look? There's like 40 different font sizes and all these offers, and, you know, doesn't follow how a user would look on a website to really push them to do the next step. It just kind of, everything's thrown into it, and it's like, well, let's see what sticks. And it's really confusing. You know, it's just having a clear, concise, straightforward message for that type of customer you need. Water damage lead, emergency situation. Bam, dude, you got to have that phone number on the website like 10 times, you know?
Right.
You just got to say, like, we're always available, call us, you know? And that gets lost some places. I've been to websites, they have this tiny phone number on the top, and you're like, dude, you don't even see it when you're on the desktop, let alone mobile.
Or dark gray font on a black background.
That's a good one, too.
Yeah.
I've seen that, too.
It's amazing how simple a website needs to be in order to shape behavior. We talked last time about the stress factor of most clients, and we're incredibly fortunate in especially water damage restoration, but any emergency service, and that can be a biohazard, that can be, you know, fire and smoke cleanup, any of those things. We're incredibly fortunate because very little is required to shape behavior simply because of the stress factor the end user is under at the time that they're receiving the message that we're giving. I would say, and I'm making a left turn here, I would say in response to what you see in most websites, 9 out of 10 websites I see, they are talking about what we do rather than why us. I don't know why this is kind of the default, but let's talk how confusing is a message when you land on a site and you're hit with 40 different service offerings versus just the reasons, the 5, 6, 7 reasons why you should call that company. How confusing is that to a customer?
Well, it's incredibly confusing because it's a dispersed message. It's kind of like an explosion where things just kind of go everywhere at once. And there's no way for someone to focus their attention on the one thing they're looking for. You know, having worked with a lot of water damage companies over the years, you're always looking at where their main lead point comes in. you know, on their main lead point is that emergency plumbing call, burst pipe, you know, frozen pipes, you know, some, like in Texas, they have their hot water tanks in the attic, which I didn't know that not too long ago, which I was like, that's crazy. Yeah. So you have basements there. So it's like that, those blow and you get a huge flood in your second floor of your house, driving down to the first floor. So that's where they're getting their lead coming in. They're getting a phone call. From there, the water damage company is taking over to do the upsells or the additional services. Like, oh, great, you're going to have that. You have molds. You know, hey, we did the dry out and pulled all your drywall out, but now you're going to need a reconstruction, you know, a situation here where you have to handle this. So it's like those are the other services that aren't necessarily getting them that call coming in. The call's coming in off the water point.
Right.
So by saying like, okay, we do all these other things, you know, and I, you know, there are points where that is not the same. It's like molds, you know, you can get the mold call too, but we're bringing, you're bringing the customer in on that water side, and then they can add those additional services after the fact by coming in for the emergency call, which is kind of a loss leader for these guys.
Right.
You know, I've seen that. And so having that clear message for when a person comes there is really inherently important. Because it is the customer, you know, they aren't looking for all these other things. They're looking for that one point. And we're always looking at biggest revenue stream for a customer, for our clients. So we focus on that, and then they can branch onto those other areas and focus on a lot of the other things that they do. But like, that's a main revenue point for them, which expands into so much more revenue for other things that we're not even involved with, you know, and that's more on the internal side of the company, handling the sales and the upsell side. So having that clear message, not dispersing them, allows it to focus what you're doing in that one area and being really great at it. You know, like we found, you know, a really great niche market working with water damage, and we keep fine tuning our platform more and more and more, you know, month to month, and making it better and faster and making improvements as new technology comes out. And that makes us really good at doing that thing. You know, we're not focusing on like, you know, hundreds of different things with it. We're just like, we're focusing on that one thing and just making that a really great product for our clients.
Right.
And I think the same goes in like any other industry you're in. You know, it's like finding that vertical point, just like hammering away at it, and then building other ones that come into it as a funnel, and building another one off of that.
Right.
You know, we work with a lot of startup guys in water damage too. I mean, right now it's really kind of taken off. And like the last 2 years, I've seen the industry really just boom with a lot more companies starting. And we're helping these guys out who are new companies, who don't have anything. And it's just really focusing them on just doing that one thing, handling that water damage lead 100%. You know, I told you this last time too, I had a problem in my house where we had a small flood. So I was on the other end of it as a customer. And I had to make a call. It was like, you know, like a Monday morning before work at like 7 in my house. And I had to make an emergency call, actually. So I looked locally where I'm at in Connecticut. And I looked for like emergency plumbing. And I found the first website. And I called. They didn't answer. So then I went back to my search real quick. I found the second website. And funny enough, they actually did the websites very much how we would do it. I actually thought they did a great job. This place is called Advanced Plumbing here in Connecticut. And they had this sticky phone number on the top, and it just said right away, it's like, we handle all emergency floods and plumbing problems, like right away, within 1 hour. It was like a really direct communication that I felt better about calling these guys. And I called, and they had an answering service. And the woman answers, like, she goes, oh, well, they'll be in 30 minutes and they'll call you. And the guy actually called me in 10 on his way to work, who was one of the lead guys. And he's like, well, I'll send someone over right away. And they were here within like an hour handling the situation. So there's a lot of things that worked with on that. It's kind of like a supply chain or a service line chain, you know?
Right.
A lot of things are really in sync, and they had their act together as far as the delivery and service, but also their website. Looking back on it, for me being consumer side and taking that viewpoint, I was like, wow, it really just impinged quickly. Now, the first one, they could have gotten the call if they answered the phone, and the website was okay. The second one I was much more interested in because it actually did all those things that you should be doing for emergency service, especially what you're communicating to a customer. So that's just from my experience, you know, it's that clear communication from me being a consumer going, oh, wow, you can totally help me out right now. And they did, and they did a great job. You know, I needed the help, you know, and that's what I was looking for as someone in that situation.
And I find it interesting. Your first thought, even though you know this restoration world exists, is a plumber. And I guess that's going to be a podcast for another another date. Why do homeowners call plumbers before they call ICRC certified restoration technicians? I'll tell you why though.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I'll tell you why because it was actually a backup in my plumbing line. That's why. Right. If it was like a hot water tank or something, I'd probably end up going like a water damage company.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a major, major, it wasn't like super crazy bad. It was bad enough. Right. But that was why, because it was literally like a backed up plumbing problem. Yeah. Which they had to run the snake down like 50 feet and clean all this grease out and all this junk, and that, which was what it was.
Right.
So that was why my viewpoint came in off of that. But there's no reason why a water damage company can't capitalize on that, building their referral networks or systems or do something themselves, you know, as part of the marketing. So.
And, you know, it's a conversation I have with guys every day. It's, I think most homeowners think like that. When they see water in a place in their home where it shouldn't be, it's synonymous with oh, I need a plumber. And so little by little, guys are getting it. But it's interesting in how you responded to the message from the plumber, and it was that clear, concise message that just sort of shaped the behavior, which was converting into a phone call. I think so often restorers, there's this bad habit of wanting a website to look and to look a certain way, to communicate a certain message that the restorer likes and wants to see. And it usually follows the same formula. We mentioned earlier, it's laundry listing the service, you know, offerings. Mm-hmm. Then it's lots of pictures of the equipment, the crew, the vans all parked, you know, together, like a, I don't know, an Air Force poster or something. And that's all good and well, but the customer is landing on that page or that site with a totally different expectation in their mind. And I think it's very similar to what your expectation was. Mm-hmm. I need help now. And I need to know when I call this number, I'm going to get that help. Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But it also comes down to showing that, you know, it is a local company, even if they do have franchises running with it. You know, it is a local business. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a local crew. I think the photos of the vans and the people are great because it creates identity and separation from other types of organizations, which will remain nameless here. Right. I don't want to get in any trouble. But it's just showing a difference. You know, like, yeah, you can offer the same service as some big corporate conglomerate of doing like water removal and cleanups in that restoration, but you know, there is this more, there's funny, there's a viewpoint when it comes to the local company that it establishes trust right away, because there seems to be a lot more, a private business owner has a lot more skin in the game.
Yeah.
And he's more involved in his business and day-to-day operations, whether he's a, you know, a crew of two or a crew of 40, it's like, it's still his company or her company. And showing that they are a local business tends to have some kind of level of accountability with it from the eye of the consumer, which is really funny. You know, it's like, oh, they own the business, they're responsible for it. And there's immediate validation and establishing reliability. Trust is kind of a dirty word. You know, I don't like the word trust, but it's like, you know, reliability, and they can deliver. And showing, like, you know, the local testimonials, like, you know, that company down the road hired them and had a great experience. It's like, well, I feel like I can count on them because the network is here and they actually have delivered in this area. So not anonymizing the company and making this anonymous corporate branded, awesomely beautiful marketing program, it's not the way to go. You know, the way to go is like, you know, this is the local valid guy or gal who's running a really top-notch operation that really cares about the customer first, you know?
Right.
And that in and of itself has incredible value. And then not doing the, and like you brought up the generic photos, like, I don't know how many times I've seen those damn blue dryers on websites. You laugh because you've seen them too. And I'm sure all the guys listening have them on their websites or have seen them at other places. And I've seen the same stock photo 1,000 times. And it's like, it's so anonymous. It's just like every other company. And it's like, let's just pull that out.
I think prior to this year, because the industry is undergoing some major change right now at a very accelerated pace. But a year ago, it was the same 12 or so stock images. If you Googled water damage repair and did an image search, it was the same 12 images. And you could literally find it from companies based in the States, Australia, Great Britain, Canada. I mean, we were all using the same 12 photos. And it was around the same time I started saying, hey, if you're going to upload your photos, watermark them, because they will be stolen. They will be used by some lead generator outside of Sydney, you know, trying to sell leads to restorers. So I totally agree with personalizing the website's message. Now, you mentioned the word trust and how you don't personally like the word. You told me a story about, I don't know, 2 years ago. And I think it was about your own website, and you were looking at some Google Analytic data, and you noticed that changing the word trust to another word increased your conversion. So you remember that story, or do you remember that instance?
Yeah, actually, I was talking with Dan York over at Stellar about this, and we're looking at some conversion points, and I wanted his outside viewpoint. So we talked for about half an hour about it, you know, and we had done some surveys prior to that about our market and what people were looking for out of a company. And as a side note, what I found out of the survey was absolutely hilarious. That one of the questions we had is, you know, when you chose a web development company, what was one of the reasons why you chose them? And like 9 times out of 10 people said, well, they answered their phone and their email. And I laughed and I was like, wow, that's not what I thought. I thought it'd be all these cool, elaborate, wild things. And it wasn't. It wasn't like because they were great at programming, because people didn't understand that. The client doesn't understand what we do for programming unless they've done it themselves. So it's kind of a big mystery. And I thought it was because of our great design sense. And well, the client's really counting us to design anyways. And if they're not a designer, they're just going to say, well, I just need you to design it. It came down to the phone calls and the emails. And that even was like throughout the project too, like making sure you're following up and staying in touch. So I was kind of hung up on the word trust for a little bit, like, you know, a company you can trust, because we kept getting these calls for companies that did a really bad job. And the client will call us like, look, I'm in a bad situation. Can you help me out? You know, the company totally went ghost on me. I can't find them. You know, they took all my money. Like, I've had those phone calls a lot, unfortunately. And so we're like, yeah, we'll totally help you out. And we'll get into it and see what we can do. And I had this viewpoint, like it was a company that you can trust. So I was kind of hung up on that for a little bit. And I had it on my stuff for a little while, and it really wasn't pulling like I liked. So I wanted an outside viewpoint. So I actually called Dan. We had a conversation about it, and he was like, well, we got to look at it this way. You know, it's like, you have your surveys here. You have all this information. You can actually survey your testimonials, which I did do. We actually go through all my testimonials of what people are looking at, and what came out of it was reliability. So it was a kind of a cool exercise to talk through it and just notate the stuff down. And I was like, wow, reliable is the right viewpoint, because you can count on us. That word reliable has a lot more to go with it instead of trust, because trust is kind of a dirty word, because it just seems there's a lot of baggage that goes along with trust, the word trust. Reliable, though, if someone could put their own understanding into that, what that would mean, but we, at any point of the process, you know, we are here and we are available and we are going to do what we say we're going to do. And that in and of itself helped in a big way, you know, being a reliable company. And that addressed that one point of what happens in our industry is that someone hangs out a shingle and they're like, hey, look, I can do websites, and they have no idea how to do it. Which I only laugh because that's how I was when I first started. But we have some integrity, though. We do. And
a few sites under your belt for experience. Yeah,
quite a few. Yeah. So yeah. We were working. We're showing how we're not like. You know.
Yeah.
Company. Okay. Great. People know there's thousands of companies out there. There are a dime a dozen. We have tons in our state.
Yeah.
By saying the word reliable is like, you know, we're not like this. We have positioned ourselves differently than what people might be seeing on the market in a bad situation. And that's not everybody, you know. You know, it's maybe a handful of guys out there making a big mess in our industry. So we took it upon ourselves to take the viewpoint of like, well, let's put some integrity and morality and ethics back into the industry by delivering every time and executing and doing something simple, like actually doing my job.
like answering emails and
exactly.
I'm going to get so many eye roll emoji instant messages and emails because it's been a struggle over the past few months for me to be disciplined enough to do that frequently. So
I need an assistant, man. You should get like an office assistant. Just handle all your correspondence.
I just need a bot. I just need to like program an AI to respond and then add it to my calendar. That's what I need.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, you know, because that's cheaper. So I would imagine there are restorers listening who have invested a good bit of money into websites that aren't making the money. What are some, I guess, red flags that they might be looking for if they look at their website objectively? What are some things that site may not be doing that may be causing this lack of conversion when they are found? And granted, this assumes that people can actually find them on the internet. And it also assumes they're doing some sort of active marketing or advertising effort to that site. But assuming they're found, so we know traffic is going into the site every month. It's from within the service area. If they're doing like an AdWords effort, we know the searches are actually relevant. But that site isn't making the phone ring. What are some things they could look at in their site to sort of test its, ability to convert?
Well, from the technical side first, making sure the website is totally mobile friendly. And I still come across websites to this day that are not, you know, and mobile friendly means that the actual layout changes when you go to different size devices, from small smartphones like the Apple 4, the iPhone 4S or 4E, whatever it is, all the way up to, you know, the large tablets and then desktop computers. And in our industry, we call those responsive websites because they respond to the size of the view window that the person is using to view the website.
Right.
That's one. And I still see them to this day, some that aren't. So that is actually very important. And when it aligns with SEO on the marketing side, that's actually something you really would need to consider if you don't have that. Not having a separate mobile website, actually having your website do that. It's one website.
Right.
And you have two websites, like one's mobile, one's a desktop, and then that can create a hot mess on the marketing side too. But that's actually one from a technical side. From a message and aesthetic side, there are things that I've seen that tend to violate specific policies that are actually really helpful. Some of them become validation points. IICRC. I can't say that fast enough. The certification,
yeah.
BBB certifications, awards, you know, you get super service awards from Angie's List, you know, you got awesome, stellar, amazing Google reviews. Like, why aren't you broadcasting that out? Because you're letting your customers speak for, you're letting the validation of your service speak for what you can do. You know, you're not up there, you know, preaching from a mountain and being like, you know, I'm the best. You're letting all these other vehicles do that for you, which is great. Another one I've seen, as we talked about briefly and touched on, was a phone number, which is just baffles me still that I've seen these tiny phone numbers, and it's like, man, you got to make that like pretty prominent, make that one of the first things you see, you know?
And I'll add, make sure it works. I'm thinking back to a client that I recently had. It was actually a shared client, between myself and Stellar, and I'll try to make it as anonymous as possible, but this company had just spent $5,000 on a website, and not a single phone number on the site was coded to a pound sign. It was nothing was coded to actually be capable of click to dial. And on top of all that, it was the wrong number anyway.
Oh no.
Like, it was just shocking that these people had just thrown out a ton of money at a website. It was a pretty website. It was one that I didn't believe would ever convert a phone call. But the phone number was shocking to me. It was in the header, the footer, it was all throughout the pages, and it was the wrong number A, which we learned, you know, probably 2 weeks into the process. And then it wasn't coded with a click to dial function at all. I was shocked. And what it taught me is oftentimes the simplest solution is what you got to look at first. So if I know traffic's going to a site, I know it's relevant, I know it's from the service area, the first thing I look at is the phone number. And then I look at things like page load time and mobile optimization. You said mobile friendly. I've begun saying mobile first. The data is it takes no prisoners. 3/4 plus of all traffic to a water damage restoration site is going to be on a mobile device. So that site has to think that its user is on a phone first before it thinks it's on a desktop. And that's what where most sites, many sites now are responsive because WordPress, you know, tends to do that out of the box now. Wix tends to do that out of the box now. But it doesn't mean it's designed with a mobile device in mind first and a desktop second.
Right. It's very true. That's very, very true. The phone number is a big one too. I've seen that get kind of wonky and screwed up. You know, I always recommend, you know, with the guys we work with is, you know, take the time to look through what we're doing too. Make sure you really fully duplicate it. Make sure the information is accurate. I mean, I'm pulling everything I have up here and we double check everything, but I always ask our guys before we even launch it, you know, to always double check that stuff because those are very important points. About a wrong phone number, what off one digit, is going to totally screw you up. And you're like, why aren't the calls coming in? And then it becomes all these unusual solutions instead of just,
right,
you know, just looking. And so it's just an exercise, just an observation point, you know, even if it's just 30 minutes just to take the time to look. But there's other points on the website too, you know, and there's other things that are very, very helpful when it comes to, you know, points where, you know, if you end up working with insurance companies directly, customers like that. They right. really do. The bureaucracy of insurance is a nightmare. I go on the Restoration Rebel thing and I see some of the guys, some things guys are posting up there talking about dealing with insurance companies, you know, and some kind of annoyed. Someone will be like, okay, I learned this trick, you know, or I learned this thing, or I figured out how to deal with this bureaucratic problem with this type of paperwork right. or this type of filing. And you're like, wow, what a nightmare. But from the customer side, they're going to even be more in over their head if it's like a really big problem, you know, and there's a lot to do. So if a customer knows that a restoration company is in there on their side to help them out, it's like you got their back, man. You know, in a bad situation, stressful situation too.
Right.
But yeah, the click to call phone number is incredibly important. And then what I talked about with the photos, you know, you got to pull those generic photos out. You got to have a crappy photo of the owner. It doesn't need to look great, man. It doesn't need to be a professional photograph. You know, you can use your iPhones and Android phones these days and get decent photos, you know, but it's a photo of the owner. I had a guy down in Texas and he had a great photo of him, his wife, and his son as a family. And him and his wife were co-owners in the company and they had a picture of their 8-year-old boy on there. And I thought it was great. I thought it was like a show that this was a family. This was people who are like, you know, they go to your baseball games, they live in your neighborhood, they're totally part of the community. You know, they're like real people.
Right.
And that adds so much to it. It's the context, you know, the context of those images. You know, you can throw up a crappy website, honestly, and you might get calls. But it's, you know, some of these points, these very strong points, really do benefit the guy in the long run, the business owner in the long run, because they're all geared towards how the customer is seeing them and perceiving them and finding something quickly. And it becomes quick. Page load time, you brought that up too. Great. WordPress, we build in WordPress, but WordPress is notorious if you're not careful for being bloated if you use a lot of plugins. And all the stuff that loads on the website all needs to load, you know, and it takes a little while to run that stuff. You got all these weird, unusual scripts and plugins and things running to kill your website. The second part is the server side too. You can have a very lean and mean website, but you have a server that is like a shared hosting environment.
Right.
The way shared hosting works, just so you know, is that you can have your website on your own account and you're like, oh, this is my account with my hosting. So GoDaddy does this. They have like economy hosting, right? So they're like $4 a month. And I don't mind saying them by name because I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, I don't either. Go for it.
I'm not a huge fan. Yeah, and they do some okay stuff. Some stuff they do great, like domains and helping out with the email stuff and everything is great. I love it. I use all my domain registration with them. But on the hosting side, you know, it's always better to spend more on the hosting with them, you know, for bigger accounts because like the economy hosting, it's one, your one account, which you think it's your account, but you're actually on a like a server or a rack, which has thousands of other websites.
Right.
And you have no control over what's on any of those other websites and what they're doing with them. And it can kill, like it can bring in this really heavy load on a server and start crashing other things. You know, and they've gotten better about handling, you know, what kind of resources you have, but they really minimize what you have access to. So that can actually bog down a website. So when I talk to my guys, I always talk to them about, you know, getting hosting, which is fast. You can do it with like cloud hosting. WordPress has tons. There are tons of different managed WordPress hosting companies out there that just work exclusively in that. And what managed WordPress means is they automatically back up your website. They have faster load times. They have like 24-hour customer support. I mean, these are all really important things to think with. They have really great caching. And to define what caching is it's basically taking snapshots of pages and scripts so that it serves them up faster to the consumer on the front end. So it seems apparent that your load time is less.
Right.
So that actually helps a lot. So these managed hosting companies actually do a much better job as opposed to getting like the cheapest hosting you can get. You know, you spend those couple extra bucks on the hosting and really find a robust service and robust solution, it will benefit someone in the long run. So that's always a technical area too, just from how the website's developed, because, you know, if a web page takes 2 seconds to load and someone's on there, they're bouncing. They're going to another website. They're like, they just hit their back button on their phone or computer. Like, yeah, whatever. I'm just going to find somewhere else. So they open a new tab or somewhere else, and then you already lost them.
Right. And that's the reality of page load time. A long load time can be a total conversion killer. And so for the restorer who might be, you know, scared of words like caching and servers and things like that, just look at it from your customer's perspective. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. A supply line has popped under the kitchen sink. They're standing in water. They can't wait 12 to 15 seconds for your site to load. They need instant solutions. And that's where, I mean, I still see sites every single day. I mean, I've just sort of gotten in the habit of when a new prospect calls me, I look at the website and determine whether it's salvageable. And then I look at, and when I do that, I look at things like page load time through gtmetrics.com or Pingdom. And especially if they've been doing some effort like SEO or like AdWords, but they say, I just can't get the phone to ring. Almost 10 times out of 10, the site is the reason behind that. Something has gone terribly wrong with the site. And oftentimes it's something simple like page load time. Another thing you mentioned with WordPress and the different plugins and scripts you have running, images. When you upload an image to WordPress, I think it defaults to like 3 megabytes. So you throw a couple of those on the homepage, especially the gigantic, you know, 1440 banner image everyone loves that it does you no favors. That inevitably slows down that site's loading time.
Yeah, well, it's the original source file someone's putting up. Like I had we were doing a website for this big this company here in Connecticut, and we our role was just to develop the shell of the website and everything of all the functional stuff, and they're putting in the content. So I got a call from the client one day, and they're really concerned why the site was taking a long time to load, and it was on our server at the time. I was like, well, that's weird because everything's pretty lean and pretty tight. So let's go take a look. And I was like, well, what page do you have an issue on? She showed me. I was like, wow, this is taking a long time. This is really odd. So I waited for the page to load, which took 3 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, what's going on here? So I started looking just through the assets, which is one of the first things I do. And she managed to upload a file that was 45 megabytes on there for a graphic. It was an illustration graphic. And I was like, oh, I was like, I see what the problem is. I'm like, well, let's pull this out and delete it. And the page load instantly. And I was like, okay, good. And then we had it was just an education point. Like I just had to explain to her about saving things for web and optimizing the image assets for web. And then we got it down to like 30 kilobytes and it still looked great. It was still very clear resolution.
Sure.
And the page was like loading instantly. So it is part of it. It's like how those things are getting uploaded. So if guys are working with developers now, and they're finding their load time is really long, it's like they can look at two things. They can look at the website first, because changing a server is a pain in the ass. Like if you're not prepared for it, it's not a pain in the ass. It's more labor intensive. No, it's just much more labor intensive. Where let's look at the simple solution first is like, you know, you can have your developer go through the website and ask them to, you know, lean everything up. Are there plugins you're using that are bloated? Are there plugins that aren't actually active?
Right.
That can actually have an effect. Like plugins you're not using, like clean all that stuff up, update all your plugins, update all your software. Those things can help. Getting rid of things that you know don't need, like some people have like the chat boxes, but they never use them, don't have it on there. You know, like it's just using up space. It's using up resources. Getting all your image assets down to a minimum, the most minimum size you can while maintaining the integrity of the file. I mean, the quality basically of the image.
Yeah.
So you start with those areas. And then I always say look for malicious code too, because not everywhere reports that there's malware on a website. Like actually just do an audit of the website and make sure there isn't anything on there that like unusual scripts and things that are actually like malicious software, which could hurt your website. And there's other, any good developer will know there's websites where you can just check and see what files are actually corrupt. And if that doesn't work and you do everything and you're like, wow, everything's really tight and really clean, then it becomes, okay, what's happening on the server now? And then like you can look at making a shift to somewhere else. And there's a lot of companies out there that can do managed WordPress. Even GoDaddy does it, and they don't do too bad of a job with doing managed WordPress. But those are the suggestions I have, you know, when you're running into that issue, because I've seen it enough, you know, when we're going to websites and poking around and talking with new clients about what they have. And you're like, wow, this is taking a long time. I'm very impatient. So I'm like, okay, this is not working out. You got to fix this.
And it's, you know, I guess we'll boil everything down to the basics. The reason why this is so important is because the website should be the most productive member of your sales team. It should also be the member that never calls in sick, never has childcare issues. It's why it requires a little bit of an investment of time and resources. And if you want to do it right, you've got to bring in a professional to tend to that, because most restoration companies aren't water damage repair and web design or web development companies. But there's no reason why the website shouldn't be making, you know, there's really no reason why it shouldn't be at least 50% of a restorer's revenue each year. And I think that to sort of rabbit trail, lead generation that has plagued our industry for years is a much more lazy approach to getting new work. And one of the many, many problems I have with traditional lead generation and the whole pay-per-call model is that it's almost an opiate, and it lulls you into complacency, and you in turn don't pay attention to things like, well, what is my own website that's branded with my own company? What is it doing for me? Because it's so much easier to go out and buy a phone call for $500 and not go tend to, you know, the dumpster fire you have on your website behind you.
Mm. It's interesting. I mean, you know, I can't speak much for the lead gen. I mean, I always do this exercise in my business, is that I actually write out what all my lead generation lines are and see which one needs some help, or any or all of them, or if they're all working great, just make sure I have that all written down of what's really working great with them. You know, like I know guys who get a lot of work off of lead gen, or, you know, they use a company that they pay for leads, but it gets them business and they're very happy with it, you know?
Right.
But I always try to do this exercise, like, you know, thinking with all the different marketing avenues you have and making a list of those, and then figuring out what you can do with each one of those areas as like a program, and develop that thing over some period of time, can give you a lot of different avenues. You're not putting like all your eggs in one basket kind of approach, you know, because if one of them fails, you have other ones to fall back on. Right. You know, and they're just different income sources different income lines that you can bring in. So lead gen, I know, I mean, I hear some guys I've talked with have complained. Some guys really like it. You know, some guys are like, look, I pay $150, $200, $300 a lead, regardless of whether or not I get that job. I still got to pay for it. And you're like, wow. I was like, well, I don't know what industry I've ever been in where you have to pay money for something you're not sure you're going to get. But that always baffled me with that model.
Yeah, this one.
Yeah, it did baffle me. But I hear that time again, I'm like, really? I was like, oh, okay. But then some guys just like swear by it, and they're depending on their market. You know, yeah. Sometimes their markets are like, they're like one of the few guys in the area. They just do a bang up job with the lead gen. You know, they pay whatever they pay for that lead, but it gets lots and lots of work. And they feel it's more guaranteed, which it might be. But, you know, with websites, it's like you have these multiple lines on a website. Like you have your SEO, which is very targeted. Like good SEO is very, very targeted, you know, and like you know where your area is and where what people are looking for and how they're looking for it. PPC is very targeted too.
Right.
You know, and they're just different price points and different approaches to how you can do it. And both of them together can work very successfully. And that all goes to the website. So that's kind of like that package. Like, you know, you have the SEO, you have the PPC, and you have the website together. It was like this package of three things together. And then you have your lead gen, which I know guys get work off of that. Some guys have referral lines with insurance agencies, so they have that third line. Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, you know, I don't know much about what's using Facebook on that. I've never really seen a lot of success. Like, I'm helping my cousin out right now with he's selling hats and shirts, and we're doing Facebook ads with him. Mm-hmm. It's taken off like gangbusters. Like, that thing works great for him, you know, because he's selling a shirt for like $25. Water damage, not so much. It's not the first place I'm looking. You know, maybe as a restoration construction company, maybe, but I haven't seen a huge success with guys doing that. But I haven't seen anybody prove it to me that it can or can't work. Maybe on that. LinkedIn, definitely. You know, I see guys work LinkedIn on it like magic when we're dealing with like commercial owners and working on like prep plans and disaster readiness and stuff, and they're building long-term relationships with these guys. Cool. It's a great place to do it. But now you have like three avenues already that you can write down to figure out, well, what can I do with these to, you know, exploit the hell out of it, get as much work as possible. Actually, four.
Yeah.
But that's the idea. It's like, you know, you really work those lines. So it's like not one, it's all. And it's thinking of all those things. You know, and you can see which one that gives you the most bang for your buck, but you're working all these different lines. So going back to your said, yeah, your website is your sales guy, your sales gal, whatever, however you want to put it.
Yeah.
Not gender specific these days, I don't know. But it is a salesperson for you. So it actually is communicating directly all the time for you, and it should be an extension of the company. It shouldn't be this like, you know, weirdo stepbrother from wherever who's kind of drunk all the time. It shouldn't be that. It shouldn't have, you're right, it shouldn't have that personality. You know, it should be
And I meet so many of those drunk cousins all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, it shouldn't be that. You know, it really should be the professional salesperson that's really, really communicating to the person. You know, to the person, you know, not to this hard sell even. It's just like it's directly communicated to them in a very simple way, and it will get across.
Yeah.
It will. So, but yeah, that was my recommendation, man. You know, look at all those lines. That's what I do. Write everything down and keep all those lines in and keep everything checked and use all available resources you had, not just your website, but your website is important. It's important what you're doing.
I agree 100%. I do not like being the only egg in the basket. When it comes to AdWords, I absolutely preach diversifying lead streams. And even if that means a lead gen, I don't hold it against guys. It can't be plan A when there's no B, C, D, E, and F in the works as well. So it definitely has its purpose for a time. It's just not a long-term strategy that I recommend. But okay, so plug your site. How can guys get a hold of you? What's the best way? And then what are some other areas outside of web development that A-Squared Studio could potentially help guys with?
We'll do the second one first, then I can give you my info. So we do, as a full service firm, we offer, you know, graphic design. Locally, we can do photography and videography, you know, so we're out of Connecticut, New England area. We do the web development, but we can also add a lot of other features on websites if people need them for web development, from full application work to guys who want to do continuing education things on their websites and people registering for those things. So the graphic side, you know, we do like full stationery branding, logos, trade show booths. Don't get much into truck wraps. I always rely on like truck wrap companies to do that because there's a very heavy technical side to it. And I'd rather have that company do it, but we can provide all branding tools and materials for something like that. Don't do any printing on our own, but we do drop ship. So I can actually get printing done and have it drop ship to someone in Texas, California, Oregon, anywhere in the United States. And we have good printers that we can use online. So if someone needs it, doesn't want to deal with it, he doesn't want to deal with printers. We can take care of everything from soup to nuts for our clients. So they need business cards, stationery, sales folders with inserts and all that. We can do all that stuff and have it sent to them directly. And it's quick turnaround, just like anything we do. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's really, really cool. With my company, it's A Squared Studio. We're at asquaredstudio.com. And best way to get a hold of me is to call my office. You can call me at 860-685-0741. Because otherwise I give you my email and then, you know, people are trying to jot it down while they're driving.
There's a rash of accidents all over the country. Okay. So good. Thanks for giving that out. And I'll link it in the SoundCloud description and put it on Facebook too. And I expect your phone will blow up. Alex, you are the consummate professional.
Thank you.
I've said many, many times over the years that without your expertise, what I do, what companies like Stellar eMarketing do, even what these guys are doing on their own on social media and in getting reviews, it's all for naught if you aren't a part of that process, because your sites historically convert and they convert at a very, very high ratio, and everything else is total experimentation. And so I make this pitch when I've got a prospect on the phone who has a less than optimal website, and I said, hey, we can point ads, we can spend a couple of grand a month in AdWords dollars, but understand that it's all an experiment and we won't know if it works. Whereas if we go with the tried and true method, I'll sleep fine tonight because I know it's going to work. And that's the same with every client that we've shared over the years and every client that I send your way. Even if AdWords isn't, if they're not a good candidate, don't have the budget for AdWords, that's fine. If I know that they have taken that first step of investing basically the price of a nice shiny new LGR, and they put that into a website that you've created for them, I know that that's an investment that's going to just pay dividends year after year after year. So what you do is essential to our business, and frankly, I think you are absolutely a part of this movement, because what companies like mine does and yours does and Stellar eMarketing does is we create that independence. And we remove the dependence from TPAs, lead gens, and we make these guys profitable and successful. So that stuff gets me going. It's like my morning coffee. So I greatly appreciate the time. We did go over just a hair, but I'm sure that at least the nerds in the audience will appreciate it. But thanks for coming on. We'll have to have you on again soon.
Well, hey, thank you very much, Jonathan. It's my pleasure. I'm glad we've had this friendship for as many years as we have. It's been really great. So thank you.
All right.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, everybody.